Today with Claire Byrne on RTE Radio 1, sponsored by Cash and Carry Kitchens. Transform your home with the warmth of an Irish-made kitchen. Cashandcarrykitchens.ie.
First this morning, Bernard Gloucester, HSE Chief Executive, is here with me in the studio. You're very welcome.
Morning, Karen.
Thanks for being here. Now, you've been head of the HSE for 2 years. In fact, I think you were here right at the beginning of that term. But later today, there are nurses' unions. They're expected to give notice of imminent industrial action over unsafe working conditions. How have things become so bad, particularly over the time of your watch over that 2 year period? What's going on?
Sure. Well, I think this goes back to what we call the pay and number strategy that was set for the health service in the middle of last summer. And as you know, that came off the back of a fairly blunt instrument recruitment pause when it was very clear that our numbers were far exceeding the funded level that was available to support them. And so that's the background and context to it. I am on notice from a number of healthcare unions and will receive formal notice today of intended industrial action in 3 weeks' time. But can I say that there are a couple of things that I think are just lost in the narrative that we've heard about this. So in 2020, you start at 2020, there's 120,000 people in the Irish Health Service. That's whole-time equivalents. And at the start of this year, it's 148,000. And even though there was a recruitment pause for a period in late 23, early 24, and even though there's now a set number of staff for the health service, right throughout that whole period, the number of nurses has continued to grow, the number of doctors has continued to grow, the number of allied health professionals has continued to grow, all of them necessary and all of them needed. But I think there has been a view created that somehow all recruitment stopped in late 2023 and nothing has happened since.
So are you saying to the public listening to this that those unions have no reason to take this action?
Well, look, I mean, industrial action is very regrettable at any time. And apart from the fact it falls outside the terms of the public service agreement, which gives us stability, what I'm saying is the extent to which there's a reaction to a pay number strategy, one would have to be concerned when that reaction is against increasing growing numbers of staff in all of those disciplines. And those numbers continue to grow.
So I expect to
recruit 6,800 net growth more people mm-hmm. between now and the end of
this
year.
But you seem to be suggesting that you don't accept that there are unsafe working conditions, because
this is the main
reason why they're taking this action.
I absolutely accept that when you introduce a pay number strategy that gives you a cut-off date on which you reset the number, there's winners and losers in that. So the cut-off date was the 31st of December 2023. Now, on that date, as in any day in the health service, you could be carrying somewhere between 2,000 and 3,000 routine vacancies. And so on the one hand, some of the unions would argue, well, they're lost. But on the other side of that, the cut-off date of December 31st, 2023, we were carrying 4,000 unfunded posts, which government have now funded.
Mm-hmm.
And so there is room within all of those posts as people come and go to reprioritise, to address any of the pressures and imbalances and any of the concerns that are there. And we've explained that to health sector unions. And there's never yet been a dispute that hasn't been resolved in some fashion. And I'm sure over the next few weeks we'll have further discussions. But the fundamental of having a funded number of a workforce, it applies in every organisation, public and private.
Is this your strategy?
Yes, it very much was promoted by me with the board of the HSE and with the then Minister, Stephen Donnelly, and with Pascal Donoghue.
So you're not suggesting that the pay and numbers plan needs to change? You're happy with it as it stands, are you?
I'm very happy with it. I'm very happy with it because it has given us more staff. It has meant there will never be a need for a blunt instrument of a moratorium or a pause into the future. It means we can continue to add more staff, and it means there's flexibility mm-hmm. in local areas when one job becomes vacant to look and say, do we still need that job or do we have a different priority?
But you're still spending an awful lot though on agency staff, aren't you, to plug the gaps? I mean, the INMO says that that approach is unsafe and unsustainable.
And so part of the pay and number strategy has allowed for retaining an amount of agency, for converting an amount of agency to permanent employment and for reducing our dependency on it. We carry about 9,000 of a rough estimate of whole time equivalents when you look at our agency spend. So any view that there are gaps that are just not being filled anywhere, that just simply is belied by the fact that last year we spent €863 million on agency staffing. And again, I'm not for 1 minute suggesting that the staff we have aren't needed. Of course they're needed, and we're very fortunate to have them, and we have a fantastic healthcare workforce. But the view that having a control means something bad is not the case. Yeah, there's nobody in the state doesn't have a control.
Do you expect, though, and hope that that bill of $863 million will come down? Is that your aim? Is it unavoidable?
My expectation is it will come down, but it will come down largely in favour of continuing to grow the actual permanent workforce. Mm-hmm. So there is room for both. What we have now is one pay envelope for agency overtime and full-time staffing, mm-hmm. and that's linked to a number. And once the two of those are linked and we stay within those, we'll never again have to have a moratorium. We'll never again have to have those type of pause interventions that I had to make in October of 2023. And arguably, we have rapidly increasing workforce. Last year alone, Claire, for half the year we were in a pause and for half the year we were in the start of the new strategy. Last year alone, net, when you take out students and all of the other variables, net we grew by 900 nurses, net we grew by 772 doctors, half of them consultants, net we grew by 300 allied health professionals outside of our disability services. Okay. So these are huge numbers.
Listen, you mentioned doctors there, and I want to move to consultants because you did recently announce that consultants and indeed other staff as well will have to work this 5-7 roster to keep the hospitals running over the weekends to tackle overcrowding. Now, to many people, it might look like you're doing this following this fairly public dressing down from the health minister, the new health minister, Jennifer Carroll McNeill. She has demanded now that consultants are on site, not on call. So you agree with that, I assume. But why only act now when she said that?
So I don't think the minister was saying that we'd only act now. So what happened was, the last time I was here with you actually was the week that the public only contract started. Over the second half of 2023 and 2024, I made a number of changes to how we conduct what we call patient flow. And as a result of that, despite seeing an increase of some 8% of people turning up in emergency departments, we saw a decrease in trolleys more or less right through 2024, about 10% reduction in trolleys, which is an enormous achievement for our staff. What we didn't achieve and what Minister Carroll McNeill was talking about, and which I fully agree with her on, what we didn't achieve is two things. We didn't achieve consistency of discharging at weekends, and we didn't achieve consistency of other services being available at weekends to help mm-hmm. patient flow, to help people avoid going to emergency departments and to help people leave hospital. And so despite the fact a lot of very good staff do a lot of good work at weekends, it is not consistent in any fashion. And we've now taken steps to measure the amount of people who are working on the consultant side at weekends, and we're going to change that now in accordance with the rosters that are allowable in their contract.
Yeah, because she said
but
she
I also, I also think it's important to say we also have to deploy the rest of our workforce.
Yeah,
a percentage of those at weekends, because consultants need a lot of other people.
And the backup there. So she said she wasn't happy with what she saw over St. Bridget's weekend.
And she was right, yes.
And she wants that to change for St. Patrick's. Is it going to change?
Yes. So what has happened is, as I said to you, despite the improvement in the trolley position throughout 2024, I've been the first to say it has slipped in 2025. There are two reasons for that. One is the absence of a consistent process all of the time. And the other is the acuity of the frail elderly that we now see presenting at our hospitals, that's increasing. Mm-hmm. For St. Patrick's weekend, every hospital in the country has now returned to me a rostered arrangement as opposed to just the on-call. They also have on-call, mm-hmm. But a rostered arrangement to give a better spread of decision-making across emergency medicine, across in-house medicine, which is where the biggest demand is.
And you
is.
Put that call out to the hospitals directly because the minister said she wasn't happy with what happened on St. Bridget's weekend.
Absolutely. And also because we had clearly slipped since Christmas in the progress we had been making. I'm not happy with that. But the only thing I can say is that what I've identified as causing that slippage is in part that the processes we had to achieve the progress we made in 2024 just wasn't consistent. We're certainly not exploiting the value of the public only contract to the extent that it was intended mm-hmm. it could be. That's not to say all of those doctors aren't working hard. Of course they are. But certainly there are far too few rostered
right.
at weekends.
So clearly there's a resistance, is there, to be there over the weekend?
Well, whether it's a resistance or custom and practice, I'm not so sure about that. But I literally this week, I got the rosters for St. Patrick's weekend, but separately and more importantly, I literally this week have a baseline exercise concluding where we will have the deployment arrangement for every single consultant of the 4,500 in the country, no matter what contract they're on. And we're going to look at that very carefully, and very quickly we're going to rebalance that to the best effect it can be to give us roster presence up to 10 o'clock at night and particularly on
okay.
Saturdays.
So the doctors who are not on the public only contract, can you roster them on at weekends?
So there are a number of consultant contracts. The 2008 contract allows for a provision for a certain amount of hours at the weekends.
Right.
Between those and the public only contract.
So you're putting them on notice today, we will be using those hours.
Yes, and we have done in the past. We just haven't done it consistently.
Right.
And now that we have 2,700 consultants on the public only contract, we have enough of a critical mass. And people have often said to me, well, if you have them on Saturday, you don't have them on Wednesday. The point is, we now have the size of a workforce that we can distribute it better than what we had. It's grown by 25% mm-hmm. in 4 or 5 years.
So you can cover all of the days.
Better. And there are two services I really want to target this year. The first is what we call patient flow, which is what you see resulting in a trolley problem. But the second is also the expansion of availability of outpatient clinics. So if you have a family member, and they might be a child at school, or you might be working, or a whole range of other options, there are a whole variety of people out there for whom evening outpatient clinics and Saturday outpatient clinics would be much more convenient.
Mm-hmm.
It would mean we'd use more of the rooms that we have, and it would mean doctors are less crushed into the space they are from between Monday morning and Thursday afternoon. So outpatients and patient flow is the focus for this year. And I've agreed that with the minister. And I've agreed that, you know, at both policy level from the work the minister does and at the executive level with the board of the HC and myself, we are intent on getting the value, not just out of the public only contract, not just out of the consultant workforce, but of the total workforce. And that's why I'm also using the levers of the public service pay agreement mm-hmm. to now redeploy some staff on a 5/7 basis.
Yeah. You've touched on overcrowding, and people will see that in emergency departments. Of course, the University Hospital in Limerick is consistently the most overcrowded in the country, with over 100 patients often waiting to be assessed. Can you give any assurances as to when that situation is going to improve and when people in that area can expect the same standard of care that they would get elsewhere in the country?
Yeah, sure. A couple of things. The first thing is Limerick has improved. Limerick is, by any measure of the metrics we would use, is an increasingly safer hospital, which is the first thing. Yes, the overcrowding is still very uncomfortable there. They were one of the best hospitals in the country for weekend rostering and discharging since Christmas. They were one of the best hospitals for the level of discharging they attained over the majority of St. Bridget's weekend. They are not by any measure means the only concerning site in the country. I would have concerns about St. Vincent's. I would have concerns about Galway. I would have concerns about Cork and up to 5 or 6 hospitals. 5 or 6 hospitals make up 70% of the trolleys that we have. So Limerick is in that space. But the bare practical support for Limerick that everybody wants to see are the beds. Limerick will open 96 beds at the end of this summer. We opened 16 just after Christmas, and we'll open another 16 by the end of the summer. 128 all new beds, staffing all approved since last October mm-hmm. and in recruitment. And that will make a fundamental difference on that site. It's not going to be the panacea,
yeah.
but it will make a fundamental difference. And then we start the construction work of the second 96 beds.
Listen, I think it's extraordinary there that figure that you gave, that 5 to 6 hospitals are responsible for 70%
yes.
of the trolleys.
Yeah. So
well, what's going on?
We have 29 blue light hospitals the majority of those would be in what we'd call green to amber when we look at trolleys. I was on for the weekend and most of the hospitals were in that green space. What you're saying is you're seeing a concentration into the larger hospitals of the most unwell. You're seeing the impact of significant ageing, which is great in terms of life expectancy, but in terms of the disease people are living with and the burden impact of that disease on them. And anyone who has a frail elderly relative, I think, knows what that means. And you're also seeing not just demand, but you're seeing the need or the absence of a healthcare system that isn't working right through the weekend in terms of sustainable decision making and functionality. So all of those combined is what gives you that. And of course, people do tend to go to major centres, either by history or choice, but that's where they tend to go.
And you saw the NHS are recruiting these corridor-only doctors now. I mean, that's really admitting defeat, isn't it? Saying that this is the job you'll be hired to do. Are we at that stage yet?
No, and it's not something I would favour. I mean, I think when we talk about safe staffing levels, whether it's nursing, allied health professionals or doctors, we talk about them for the totality of the service they're working in. And if we have people on corridors today, or if we have people as extra trolleys on wards, or if we have people in the emergency departments, we work a system and have a very clear expectation that the team responsible for that person looks after them wherever they are. Mm-hmm. Recruiting specifically for corridors, no, that would not be in my plans. My plans would be to take trolleys down to hopefully on an average, and averages are difficult for the public to understand, but on an average, if we could get down to about 280 a day, we would probably have maxed out the capacity.
Right, so I see the
figures. At the moment, we're at 450.
Yes, and often it goes over 500 because I see the numbers coming in here every morning. So you want to have that, essentially, is what you're saying.
Yeah, we had got to an average of 320 last year, if you measure it across the year. That, as I say, turned, unfortunately, since Christmas. And it's been very difficult since then. It's been very difficult for the public and for patients and for families. And ultimately, it's been difficult for staff as well. But we're all public servants. And I guess I make the point clear to everybody all of the time when we have these conversations. We're public servants and we come second to the public interest. And we have to improve how our healthcare system works across the 7 days of the week to ensure we're at least leaving no stone unturned to the value of people's comfort.
Well, listen, plenty of people listening to this will have read the story in the Sunday Independent over the last 2 weeks. It was in yesterday as well, more developments in it. But this doctor who was rehired by the HSE after he was suspended by the Medical Council, Medical Council had written to you directly.
Absolutely.
They got an acknowledgement from you, from your office, that you were going to deal with this in the appropriate way. And then he was working almost immediately in Navan Hospital. What was going on there?
Well, it's shocking and hard to believe. So just say when the Medical Council write to me, that's a regulatory process. It's a standard process.
Yeah.
They have to write to me when certain steps are taken. The minute that comes into my office, there's an entire process for it to go back out through a whole chain of the system. And that happened. I've asked our Chief People Officer to fully review the employment of this doctor in any part of the Irish healthcare system. And what I'm particularly interested in, and I do need to await the outcome of that investigation, what I'm particularly interested in is not so much who knew what about the challenges this doctor might have presented with, but how those were not shared in the employment process and in the recruitment process and in the referencing process. It's certainly what has emerged so far would be cause for significant concern and would suggest to me that there was a fundamental breakdown in the recruitment process.
Mm-hmm.
And can I say, I don't believe that's indicative of the totality of how recruitment gets done. But if you go back to the pay number strategy, one of the things you'll hear later on, I'm sure in the day, is that our recruitment is too slow. It's too controlled. It's too overmanaged.
Well, not in this case.
Well, in this case, when you have local recruitment that isn't controlled and isn't managed, these are the type of risks you can end up with. But I will certainly be looking into all of that, and I'll be making sure that we deal with whatever the outcome of that is.
Now, the Children's Hospital, due to be completed in June, we know. Are you confident that building is fit for purpose, that there won't be any more delays or complications?
Well, I can rely on two things, I guess, at the moment. I sat in a room with the Minister and the Secretary General last October with Royal BAM, which is the international global parent of BAM, the construction company. They promised substantial completion by June. I know that Minister Carol McNeill was out there last week and she told me that again, BAM verbally confirmed that to her. There can always be slips and trips in a project of this scale. But fundamentally, what I'm working to is what BAM's completion date is, and more importantly from our side, that Children's Health Ireland are ready to commission the hospital.
That's the fit out then will begin after June. Is that
It's
what
not
happens?
Just the fit out though, it's the whole operation of how you run that hospital. It's a completely digital hospital. It's a completely different environment to what they've been in. And so the commissioning process is a 6 to 9 month process. In simple terms, Claire, I very much expect, and the National Oversight Group chaired by the Secretary General and including myself, very much expect and are working towards the target of children being in that hospital by this time next year.
Right, so we're looking at March of 2026.
Yeah, for quite a quarter one, I suppose they call it in those project management terms. But
so
yes.
The fit out will have to be done within that 9 month period, the digital aspect, and then moving very vulnerable and sick children. I mean, how is that going to be managed logistically? That is a huge challenge, is it not, to get those children from where they are to where they need to be?
Well, I guess the commissioning from my perspective comes under two umbrella headings. Firstly is the readiness of the hospital. That's not just the equipping but also the workforce, the staffing,
yeah.
Any industrial relations issues around moving and so on. So that's number one. And number two is the clinical migration from a number of sites into one site. That's the one I'd be least worried about because that's the one I think CHI would do very, very well. And I think the clinical leaders and the clinical teams and the nurses and the doctors there working with families and mm-hmm. working in teams, that will have to be done in a very stepped and careful approach. Of course, these are like we are talking about the most critically ill children. That you can
so that will have
for.
To be done very carefully.
There will be a transition clinical plan.
But just as you're talking there about this all digital hospital and staff needing to be moved, but also retrained. I mean, are you setting yourself an impossible task saying we're going to be ready to go in, we get the hospital handed over in June, we'll be ready to go in by the following March, given the scale of work that has to be done?
Well, you know, I guess, Claire, we could set timeline after timeline after timeline and try to give ourselves the comfort of different timelines. But the simple reality is the Children's Hospital, when it opens, will probably be one of the finest healthcare facilities, certainly in Europe. But the reality also is a whole generation of children have waited for this, a whole generation of families with sick children. It has had its challenges and its problems. There has to be a deadline put on it.
Mm-hmm.
I'd rather be assessed for effort and pushing forward than sitting back and leaving any unnecessary
right.
time.
Okay, the new maternity hospital then at St Vincent's, there was speculation recently that the construction can begin by the end of this year. Is that realistic in your view?
Just about the end of this year or the start of next year. The enabling works are going on. It will depend if they can finish this year, which they should. But already the design work for the new maternity hospital done. Tenders literally closed last Friday, so obviously I don't want to say too much about that. Main contractor to be appointed, and if the main contractor commences either at the end of this year or the start of next year, that will be inside the time frame and the time plan.
And listen, just very briefly to finish, there was a lot of wrangling over the clinical independence, and then there was an agreement that it would be operated by a new company with an independent board. When does that board get appointed?
That board will be appointed by the minister. It will be ahead of the construction. The first thing we have is we have the HSE is taking direct control of the building of the hospital. I've appointed a new director for capital and major infrastructure. Brian O'Connell, he will have a programme team around him. That's the first programme team to be fully populated. They will manage the building of the hospital. I'm very satisfied the learnings from the Children's Hospital are well encompassed within that. I think this will be a very successful project, and we will discuss with the Minister this year when she feels the need to finalise the arrangement for the new company to
but
run
that,
the hospital.
That won't be in place before construction begins.
No, but it shouldn't be long after it.
All right, listen, we'll leave it there for now. With Bernard Glasser, thanks for coming in. That's the HSE Chief Executive. We'll take a break.
Text 51551 today with Claire Byrne on RTE Radio 1.